Our founders, Ken and Mary, take us on a journey through the 12 steps, part two, in progress.
I wanted to read once again from the Dakota book a little bit. Until now, we've focused on establishing or renewing our relationship with God as we understood God. In step four, we begin a spiritual journey of healing our relationship with ourselves. And in response to that, I just wanted to say, I really do believe that there's great wisdom in how the steps are organized relationally. The first three steps help me to get right with my higher power, God, as I call him, her, it, them. I have no idea yet. And the next four steps help me to get right and in and heal my relationship with myself. And then I go to step five and six. Or I'm sorry, to step eight and nine and get right with others. But there's spiritual, I think, synchronicity in developing, seeking the power of a higher power first in pursuing this process, because that's the source of my true power. There is no other source other than what I make up in my head, or what I may give over to another human being, or to, back in the day, a line of Coke or a drink or whatever else I could get my hands on. So many beliefs, religions, and philosophies speak of cleansing the soul to spiritually evolve. Just as we boil river water to remove impurities for drink, so must we go through this process to drink more fully from life. As we do, we're better able to separate and appreciate our goodness from our unhealthy thoughts and behaviors. Our cleansing begins with an honest and thorough self-assessment through the work of step four. I really avoided, lived in fear. The first four step I ever did was in another program. And that same fear has come up many times as I've approached doing a step four, when I've needed to. And in every single case, that fear is rooted in the fear of shame, the fear that I'm going to see one more thing about myself or how bad I am, or old toxic shame messages from my childhood. And so for me, writing out a four-step inventory, it wasn't enough for me to just see my behaviors. And I struggled with that. I needed, at some level inside of me, I needed to know why. Why was I acting this way? Why did I react this way? Why was it so big? Why was it so intense? I needed to figure out what was driving me. What was driving my codependent behaviors? And so I really love, this is, of course, I'm a little biased because we wrote the book, but I love the four-step outline in the Coda book because it breaks it down in very specific terms. The person, obviously, in the first column. The second column was my specific codependent behaviors. And I say specific because I could kind of get around it by generalizing. Well, yeah, I was manipulative. Well, that really didn't say anything. I needed to be clean and clear and appropriate about how I was manipulative. What did I say? How did I do it? Why did I do it? What was I trying to control? Because manipulation is always about control and controlling the outcome. And so being as specific as I possibly could in my codependent behaviors was in the second column. And then the third column, which I believe was profoundly significant to me personally in my fourth step, was what feelings drove me to act that way? Because feelings drive addiction. Feelings drive codependence. And we know this is a feelings disease. And so sometimes, depending on the circumstance, it might be a combination of feelings. It might be fear that it's not going to go the way I want it to. It might be that I needed to get angry and big and puffy because I was afraid that, I was going to control the argument so that you wouldn't point out my flaws. And shortcomings and it's all my fault. I mean, I could give you 100 scenarios, but in any case, those feelings helped me to recognize these feelings drove me to act these codependent ways with this person. And when I can deal with the feelings, it makes it much easier to change the behavior. And so, and then I could look with some degree of humility at, you know, what were the consequences? How did my codependent behavior affect my relationship with that person? What did it do to intimacy, for example, with Mary? What, you know, if I got angry or whatever and it scared her, well, that drove her apart. So my codependent behaviors actually set up a degree of a sense of loss. And then to look at the last column, which is the fifth column in that outline in the Coda book, it helped me to recognize my true feelings about how my codependent behavior affected my marriage, say in this instance to Mary or to, I don't know, a business partner or with my kids or my grandchildren or friends or my sisters. God bless her, I love her to death, but I have a sister who can trigger my codependent behaviors in a heartbeat, even after doing this work for 40 some years. It's like she has that power to just say a certain thing a certain way. And she'll use it. She'll hang on to it. And I've gotten so much better in dealing with this particular sister. And grateful for that. And mostly because I can continue to look at my side of the fence. You know, as a codependent, I would say, well, if she just changed and stopped doing that stuff, I'd feel a whole lot better. So I just gave the power of God over to her to make me feel better. And then if she doesn't change, then I'm going to be angry and resentful. And so... So it really helps me stay on my side of the fence, recognize that I, the only thing I have any focus on or is it my, that is my business is me. What was my part? How did I contribute? What did I say? How did I act? Was it based in love or was it based in fear? Because all codependent behavior is based in fear. And I like, I'm a proponent of Marianne Williamson, and one of the things that she wrote about was she said, observing it doesn't heal it. And she said, feeling it does. And that's true for me. You know, I know that there's been times when I thought, well, if I could just figure this out, then everybody would go, hey. Well, that's kind of like figuring out how, I don't know, heart disease works. Okay, now I know it in the laptop computer in my brain, but I haven't done anything to change it. And I still need to do the work to change it. Knowledge to me is just information in my computer, in my brain. Recovery is a program of action. I've heard, you know, from many people over the years that, you know, 4, 5, 6, and 7 separate the girls and the boys from the women and the men. And they really force us to grow and change and evolve. And once I start taking a look at myself and to stay away from, well, I wouldn't have acted that way if they didn't, which is all about blame. Well, I'm blaming them for my actions and my behaviors. So I like the process of being able to see this was my behavior. This is the feelings that drove me to act that way. So I need to deal with these feelings in very different ways. This is the consequences of my behavior to myself and others and my feelings about the consequences. That almost always brings me to a place of humility. And so, and humility is what I'm seeking in a 4-step inventory. There's been times when I did a quick down and dirty 4-step inventory in my head, but it was just information. It really had no impact on me, you know, and then I could check it off the list and say, been there, done that. Everything's fixed now. I'm okay. But it wasn't. Nothing changed because my belief is change and recovery and evolution is the journey of the heart. And that I had to feel the humility of my actions and my behaviors. And I want to be very clear, specifically without beating myself up. Because what part of what healthy, what a four step allowed me to experience was my guilt and my shame about my actions and behaviors. That's what it allowed me to transform and heal from within. Toxic shame, and that has been my battle, would be to struggle with. And on top of that, boy, am I a stupid idiot. Boy, did I do it wrong one more time. Boy, when are you going to get it right? All that internal toxic shaming, self-abuse through one comma after another that actually has its roots in my childhood. So, you know, beating myself up is nothing more than self-abuse. So now I'm beating myself up for all the skewed forms of self-care I learned in childhood. And when I could make the recognition, it was a profound time for me early in my recovery, my CODA recovery, when I could make the recognition that my shortcomings in my fourth step were not where I was bad. They weren't where I was wrong. They weren't where I was any form of judgment. They were various specific ways that I had learned to try to protect myself. That I'd learned skewed forms of self-care, self-love. So, for example, if one of the things that I needed to do, or let's say, you know, I'm fearful that somebody's going to be really angry and upset with me because I said or did something, you know, and they come to me and they mention it, you know, and I immediately instinctively go to a lie. No, I didn't do that. What I'm really trying to do is I'm trying to stop them from being upset or hurt or possibly shame me one more time. So I have motive for lying, even though it was unhealthy, and it was skewed forms of self-care. So most of my shortcomings were clearly skewed forms of self-care for self-protection, and they were learned in childhood. Some of them, I believe, are intergenerational. We go back six prior generations. And so I inherited them even through birth, but many of them, they were modeled to me. This is how you judge people behind their back. You don't allow people to be themselves. You lie, control, manage, manipulate, avoid, play big, play small. And so when I could recognize they weren't where I was bad, these were where I was wounded. And these are behaviors that I learned to try to somehow protect myself and take care of myself. When I could see that, it short-circuited the toxic shame. I'm not a bad person. There's nothing wrong with me. These are behaviors that are about my actions, whereas toxic shame is about who I am as a human being. Toxic shame is always, for me, an I am statement. And my subconscious mind takes that as all-inclusive. I am worthless. I am not enough. I am less than. I am dumb. Where healthy shame for me is about something I've done, an action only, which I can change, I can correct, I can clean up, I can make amends. And sorting that difference out was so important for me, especially with a fourth step, because fourth step was not going to become a source for me to toxically shame myself anymore. In other words, it's just my next step forward to be accountable for who I am. And it was just as important to list in my fourth step the assets as it was to list my shortcomings and to list my feelings about my assets, the strengths, the empowerments, the boundaries, the self-love, compassion, empathy, caring, all of the things that were truly positive about me to get a clear kind of overall view of who I was as a human being, that I wasn't only those bad, terrible things. And so I'm going to shift here for just a moment. I'm going to read a little bit on the fifth step and talk a little bit about that, and then we'll open it up for questions. So in In step four, we began the cleansing process by becoming aware of ourselves and our codependent behaviors and addictions. We struck and held a match to shed light on those aspects about ourselves we had been unable or unwilling to see. In step five, we continue our cleansing process. We touch our match to the spiritual candle of accountability, becoming accountable to our higher power, to ourselves, and to another human being. For our feelings, our behaviors, and our addictions is imperative to our recovery. Without accountability, our spiritual program is incomplete, and we continue to play God or give the power of God to others. It sounds very simple, but it was a simple awakening in step five for me to recognize the magic in step five is in sharing the exact nature of my wrongs or my shortcomings with another human being, because God already knew. So I wasn't hiding any of this from a higher power. And it was, the magic is in sharing and being accountable and honest and moving it from within here out to another human being, and ideally another human being who won't judge me. What I recommend to people is if you're sharing a fifth step with somebody who judges you, run like hell. Because it is one of the most vulnerable areas of our recovery, where we're bearing our heart to another human being. And if they judge us, we're actually reliving one more time a piece of our childhood. And so it's so critical, if you are hearing a fifth step, to stay away from judgment. And that was probably my biggest fear, my first fifth step, was that I made up in my head, which is all fear is a made up story about the future, that this guy's going to look at me and go, whoa, this guy's really beyond repair. He's really sick. And a whole lot of other shaming messages that I can't repeat here. But, and obviously that didn't happen, thank God. And so my higher power already knows. It very often has, when I'm sharing and I'm accountable for my behaviors, it often brings genuine tears, because it opens my heart to the truth about me and the lengths I went to try to protect myself from being hurt, shamed, abandoned, abused, etc. Fear drives the package, and fear and shame drive the package. They create pain and loneliness on top of the fear and shame. And anger was just a big smokescreen I threw up to keep you all pushed back and away so that you wouldn't hurt me. So to drop all of that and really be vulnerable with another human being and accountable was an amazingly humbling experience. And I can't, gratitude is such a shallow word sometimes for how I feel about what my higher power has continued to bring me to and through again and again and again. Because this is an evolutionary process that for me has gone on for, well, more of my adult life than my using life now. And one more time, it's so critical and important to not beat ourselves up in any way, shape, or form. I believe that an honest, thorough, and open and vulnerable fourth and fifth step, they set us up for what Bill added when he wrote the seventh step, when he said, we humbly. And if I've done an honest, heartfelt, humble fourth and fifth step, I will humbly go to my higher power and humbly ask God to remove my shortcomings. If I have not done a fourth and fifth step from my heart, my experience is when I haven't done, those same behaviors repeat themselves. They come back down the line because I haven't healed the sources of those behaviors yet. So I think we're going to open this up for questions.
Okay, Ken, yeah. We have a ton of hands raised. We have questions in the chat.
Okay.
Ash was supposed to speak on step three and has their hand up for step four. So okay. You want to unmute Ash and go ahead and ask your question?
Thank you. My name is Ash. I'm recovering codependents. Hello, everyone. Ken.
Hi, Ash.
Hi there. Ken, thank you so much for putting this on. You and your wife. It's been really interesting, really informative, and I'm learning much from this. I really wanted to ask you this question when you were on step two.
Okay.
I've been in recovery now for almost 20 years in another fellowship.
And
thank you. I've come to believe that the core of my illness, the core of addiction, drug addiction and alcoholism, and now codependency, is a spiritual malady.
Absolutely.
Do you agree on that? Because you said it's fear-based and shame-based. But do you believe at the core is a spiritual malady, soul sickness?
I do. It's the spiritual power conflict between fear and love. And that my higher power, the spiritual answer to my dilemma is always love. And my higher power, to me, that's one and the same. And that fear is the illusion that, you know, whatever story I'm making up in my head, you know, it's interesting that Bill W., if you haven't had a chance to read the big book, I recommend to people to read it just because it's part of our heritage. And it's, you know, AA is over 80 years old now, and he wrote a four-step inventory outline, suggested outline. And, you know, he had three columns. And then he towards the end of his writing about the four-step, he suggested that we go back and we look at each of the fear, the feelings, that what feelings drove me to act this way. Make a fourth column and add just those feelings. And what we found again and again and again, it was fear, 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 fear. And I believe that's the spiritual malady, is the power struggle and what fear does to the heart. Well, I'll personalize it. What fear and shame do to my heart, mind, body, spirit, and soul. Toxic shame, I believe, is one of the most evil things in the world. It eats away at my heart, my mind, my body, my spirit, and my soul. And doing this for so long and working with and talking with so many people over the years, I really do believe that the most core fundamental fear that most human beings have are the fear of one more time being shamed. One more time being less than, abandoned, not enough, not good enough. So we will avoid, control, manage, manipulate, and it's all based on trying to protect myself from the fear that I made up in my head about what could happen. So, yes, in my philosophy or spiritual philosophy, that's the malady, is the power struggle between fear and love.
Thank
and the
you.
More I live in love, the more peace I have. It's a great question. Thank you. Thank you, Ash.
Great. Ari C., can you unmute and ask your question?
There we go.
Are you there?
Hey, there I am. Okay, sorry. Hi.
Oh, great.
Working the 12th step, I'm working the fourth step for the first time.
Uh-huh.
And so sort of a newcomer question. With the fourth step, it's one of those cases to me, is at least within the step book, where you can work it indefinitely.
Mm-hmm.
What is a good signal that it's time to stop and to proceed onward? In your experience, have there been cases where you said to somebody, hey, you need to work your fourth step more, or you're done for now, I guess?
I think like most things for me, there are some things I can actually become obsessive about. I can write my codependent behaviors in detail and detail and detail, and maybe I lied 8 times, you know, so that I'm going to write about all of those. And then, oh, there's this next person, and I lied here. And then, because we gave an example in the Coda book. When like I said, I'm a little biased one about that four-step guideline because there's other resources, there's other four-step inventories, but we, when we wrote the book, we included that one because it's so comprehensive. And so, you know, there's the risk of becoming obsessive in some four steps, and I may share with somebody that you can be obsessive to the point to where you're trying to, one more time, control the outcome by writing about every possible thing in finite detail. And so I believe that, you know, is there anything, you know, I will ask myself, is there anything else, I'll search my heart, is there anything else I need to be accountable for here? And then I'll leave it for 24 hours and I'll pray. I'll talk to my heart, hey, HP, reveal it to me exactly what I need to see. If this is where it's time to stop, then I'll stop. If there's more, make it clear to me because we found out more recent quantum physics that we are only 4% conscious. So I'm not going to see all these things that I may have done all at one time. And so I tell people to take their time because it's an evolutionary process. So oftentimes when I did my first four step, it was like I remembered some things and then, oh, that then triggered memories about some other things. And then that triggered some more memories. So it opened the door, and I recommend people take short periods of time to work on it. No more than maybe about a half hour, 40 minutes a day if you're going to focus on it every day. Some people go every other day because it's so easy to get kind of trapped in the consciousness of the, you know, my shortcomings. And so we want to take time and break from our recovery process to recognize there's a big, beautiful world out here, you know? And I also need to go experience that. Yes, I'm cleaning up some wreckage, but I also need to recognize that there's people I love and care about and I want to go spend time with. And so I've said this already once, but it's really about trusting your heart and talk to your sponsor about doing your four-step inventory because they're the guide, basically. Sponsors are people who've just been down the path a little bit farther than we have. And they can share their experience, strength, and hope. Is that helpful? Okay. Thank you.
Do we have time for one more?
Oh, we have. We are 12:30. We can go until 12:30. So.
Okay, great. We've got tons of people asking. Sophie from Oakland, California, can you unmute and ask your question? Fee, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you.
Hello.
Thank you all so much for this. I'm Fee. I'm a codependent. I've only been in the program for 2 or 3 months.
Welcome.
Thank you. And I'm just so, so grateful for the program and for you taking the time to do this today. It means a ton to me. My question is also, a newcomer question, which is, if you have any, thoughts or supporting advice around starting the steps, and you've kind of answered it because you've said the word fear so many times, I'm answering the question myself, but there is a fear to starting the step work, in terms of how much could come up. And it's also COVID right now. California is experiencing fire season. Being trapped at home is just that extra layer of doing the work at the moment. And I think my fear is starting the work, having all the feelings come up, and then where do I take them considering particularly this moment in time? And I wonder if you have any advice around setting those self-care boundaries or parameters. I would appreciate any response. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. We're kind of in the same boat, but both the fires and 113 degrees today. So even just leaving a house to go outside is miserable. So anyway, do you have a sponsor?
Sorry. I don't. And that's been a big part of the struggle of, you know, I started the program during COVID. And so it's been hard to find sponsors and even meet folks face to face. And that was my other question is, do you start the steps without a sponsor?
I would not recommend it. It's like, it's very, very difficult for us to be objective and subjective with ourselves. And the steps are a very subjective evolutionary process. And so having somebody or some friends, recovery friends from some meetings who are, that we trust, that we can reach out to and ask questions of, if we're overwhelmed by some guilt and shame and some pain about it, if we're, for example, doing a fourth step, we can call them and say, "We got a few minutes. I just need to unload some feelings here, you know, and talk about it." Doing this alone is I believe it's dangerous. And one of the reasons why is that same old crusty sponsor. What I used to say, I think a lot. Well, I think you should, and so he would tell me to shut up. And he said, one time he spun around and he looked at me and said, "Ken, your best thinking got you here. What does that say about your best thinking?" So for me to sponsor me while I'm doing the steps is crazy making. So there are folks online, you know, there's online meetings all over the world. And I think Mary had mentioned as well that, you know, if you can, you know, depending on the format of the meeting, but you can, you know, speak up, raise a hand, you know, send a chat note. "I'm really seriously looking for a strong sponsor. Would anybody be willing to sponsor me at least temporarily?" And so temporarily can often evolve into a really rich lifelong relationship. And you get to know each other that way as well. But as much as possible, try not to do this alone. I know people here in the U.S. who sponsor people in the U.K. So, you know, the difficulty is working out the time frame. So there are a lot of CODA meetings in Northern California. I'm not sure. I'm guessing many of them are online. So that would be, go hit as many meetings as you can until you find the meetings that you really like. And then ask yourself, why do I like these people? You know, what about them makes it attractive to me to want to come back to this meeting? And I look for meetings where people are sharing about their steps, where, you know, maybe they've been around 5 or 6 years and they'll open up. "Yeah, I've been doing this for 5 or 6 years, but the other day I hit the wall and had to do a 10th step." So they're talking about practicing these principles in all their affairs. And their strength of recovery in that room is my belief. And that's what I want. I want people who apply the steps, not just talk about them. Is that helpful?
That was really helpful. Thank you so much.
I'm glad you're here. Keep coming back.
Oh yeah.
Thank you, Ken. I have a couple of questions in the chat. Some of them are quick.
Okay.
One of them is, who said observing it doesn't heal it, but feeling it does?
I'm a little cautious about doing this because it breaks traditions.
Uh-oh.
And I realized after I said it earlier that I was kind of breaking tradition because she's a well-known author.
Oh.
And so if that person would like, I'd be glad to, if they want to send me an email to our email address, it's founders@coda.org, and ask the question. I'll be glad to send the information.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I'm a kind of a stickler for the traditions, and I realized I broke one earlier by mentioning your name. So,
and now you're practicing step 10 and making amends immediately.
Absolutely.
The next question on the chat is, this person wants to remain anonymous. How do you stop the self-hate talk? I just cannot seem to get the message to stop destroying me.
That's a powerful question, and it toxic shame and toxic fear are core dilemmas emotionally. Okay, I mean, we have them intellectually. We may have some of them sexually, spiritually, and physically, but our emotional core dilemma is toxic fear and toxic shame. And it exists on two levels, I believe. And it exists intellectually, and it exists emotionally. And so the first, there's an old kind of, they discovered it at one of the treatment centers here in Arizona, southern Arizona, years ago. They called it, and they were focusing it on, because codependence is also a fantasy addiction. It's an addiction to the fantasy of fear, and it's also addiction to a fantasy of a relationship. But with other fantasy addictions, for example, sex addiction, purely fantasy driven, they were experimenting with intervening on the fantasy of, if we could stop the thought in 3 to 5 seconds, we could stop the brain from releasing chemistry into our body. So we started experimenting with that years ago on a professional level, teaching people to intervene on their fear thought or their shame thought and instead insert the truth, the most loving, positive truth in response to that fear thought I can. And so I personally began to practice that as well. And not only either the fear thought or this bad, terrible thing's going to happen, watch out, watch out, watch out, the fear that they're judging me or don't like me or I'm not enough or whatever. If I can intervene on that fear thought in 3 to 5 seconds, which actually is a long time in thinking time, we can think a lot of thoughts. If I can intervene in it and stop that and then insert the truth, fear is just a habit. Fear is a learned habit and it's learned at a very, very young age. And it's based on our environment and how we're being treated in our environment. And so we will use it to protect ourselves. And so if I can intervene on that in 3 to 5 seconds and stop my brain from pursuing that habit and then intervene with the truth, for example, the truth is I'm okay, I'm strong, I'm empowered, HP is with me. I have the values and the work and the strength and the understanding to say no, stand up for myself. I'll take care of this. Stop. And this voice will come, and my voice will come kick back in and go, yeah, but what about no? Stop. Well, but we need to stop. Because I have this inner terrorist. I call him a fear monger, and he scares me. That's what he was used for. That's what was developed to help me stay somewhat safe. And so I may have to say 4 or 5 times, stop, back off, stop scaring me. The truth is, and then restate the truth so that I can imprint on the mind, on my mind, the subconscious mind, the new truth. So I'm literally forcing my brain to change the habit from a fear statement to an empowered statement. It takes practice, and I still come in today and I have to intervene. But for a while, I swear I was intervening 100 times a day, and it made me so crystal clearly aware that how much I was afraid and scaring myself throughout any given average day. And shame message is the same way. Well, you really screwed that up. No, I didn't. Back off and shut up and don't talk to me that way. That's my language. The truth is, I made a mistake, and I get a great opportunity to learn from it now, so stop it. Well, yeah, but no. There's an old saying, as without, so within. If I were talking to a teenager out here, I need to talk to the one inside of me the same way I'm talking to a teenager out here and set those same boundaries. So that's how I learned to intervene on it intellectually. But if enough chemistry is in my body and I'm feeling it in my nervous system now, I can go do what Mary and I call power work or emotional release work. I can go grab a pillow, go into a closet, an interior closet, hopefully, and unless you're in a home where, you know, the neighbors might call the police. So you want to, or go get in the car, go somewhere and do some emotional growling, but do it from just below the heart line, not the throat. And when I do that, I push energy out of my body, and that's what we want to do. Actually, there's many philosophies that do that. Martial artists, a few religions. I won't go into any of all of that, but I can clear that energy out of my body in about 2 minutes, and it works. It really works. If I can intervene in 3 to 5 seconds, great. It won't go into my body. But if it goes into my body, I do what I need to do to clear it out of my body. Because once it's sitting in my body, it's going to regenerate. It's going to regenerate because that chemistry is alive and well. We know today that it takes 30 to 35 minutes to normalize my body after a fear attack of some sort, anxiety attack, panic attack. It takes at least 30 to 35 minutes to normalize my body if I don't think about that again. Like I'm going to all of a sudden have, you know, big fear going on, but I'm going to go sit over there and absolutely not think about it and be very calm for a minute. It doesn't really work very well. So power work helps both of us flush it out in a heartbeat and stay emotionally clean, because energy or feelings are nothing more than energy. So all I'm trying to do is clear the energy. I could talk all day on that, but I won't go any farther. So I hope that was helpful.
Thank you, Ken. That was wonderful. Barbara S. has a question, if she can unmute.
Thank you. I'm Barbara, I'm codependent. And I want to thank you very much for organizing this and for the program. I've been in recovery now for 16 plus years. I've worked the steps a number of times. Yeah. And life keeps happening. So I come upon new issues as I go along. And actually, so far, you've answered some of my question already. I definitely related to the comments about emotional neglect as a child. I related to the skewed forms of self-care, because indeed I can pinpoint what I do. During my recovery, I've learned about things I never knew existed, like self-esteem, a higher power, and I definitely live the promises where I no longer rely on others to provide my sense of worth. However, here's my question. I am quite comfortable now in my own skin and giving my own sense of worth. And for fear of probably disappointment and rejection, I find that I'm more comfortable doing things and being on my own. I have lots of friends, lots of family. No one physically here right now, thanks to COVID, but I just wonder how you would recommend dealing with it. I'm happy, I'm comfortable with it, but there feels like there's something missing in that journey of recovery for me because of that block I have.
I'm not sure how to answer that in this forum.
Okay.
In the context of 12-step recovery, for me, it has been helpful to recognize the difference between need and want. So, do I need to be alone, or do I just simply want to be alone for right now? But at some point, my own loneliness is going to catch up with me, and I'll want to spend time with more and more people. You know, I've talked to many people in recent months who have basically said, I'm so grateful for COVID, because now I can be in my avoidance and it's legitimate and acceptable. I was like, okay. So I'm not sure that's playing out for you, but it certainly is playing out for a lot of other folks. Hey, this is really comfortable. I know how to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But those are thoughts that maybe come to mind. Others may have responses to that as well. But I have to be very careful about how I would respond, keep it within the confines of the CODA program itself. So.
Okay, we have another question from Agatha from Bristol, UK.
Okay.
Oh, hi, I'm Agata, codependent. Thanks for taking the question. It's actually going back to step five. I wonder if somewhere in CODA literature there is a list of attributes. I got a little bit stuck. I'm very good at looking at all my misdemeanor, and I got a little bit stuck at finding my attributes. Is it possible for you to give a little bit of example how you work across that table? And thank you so much for this event, actually.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, we're glad to be able to do it, and we thank CODA Tucson as well, because they've made this available. What was helpful for me early on, because I had such a power struggle between the shame messages and fear messages and the positive messages, was to write out the toxic shame messages. They're almost always an I am statement, and they're very short. I am not enough. No stories, no explanations. Just I don't belong, I don't fit in, et cetera, et cetera. Write them out. And then take a separate piece of paper and take the first one. Let's say it says, I don't fit in. Okay? So if that's toxic shame about me, are always lies. But they're lies that I came to believe were true. So because they're learned, I can unlearn them and create a higher truth. So what I will do is ask myself, okay, what is my higher power's highest truth in response to that lie statement? So it might be that I absolutely belong. Absolutes are the only place I allow myself. My higher power is the only place I allow myself to have absolutes, because my higher power is absolute pure light. So I absolutely belong. I am absolutely enough. I am absolutely liked and loved and adored. For example, are there people in your life today that you know that like you and love you? Okay. So then take that on. I am likable, lovable, and adorable. So you want to go through that list. The negative list is going to tell you how to write the positive list. Then you take the positive list Mary does, and it's helpful to go stand in front of a mirror every day, and from your heart, through your eyes, and into the eyes and the heart of the woman you see in that mirror, tell her all those amazingly loving things every single day. And these are all the things that we should have heard as a child. And so there's an old phrase, and I need to close here with this, but there's an old phrase that, you know, I've believed in a long, long, long time. Codependence recovery is about re-raising the child within, because it didn't work right the first time. So we have an opportunity to grow a strong self-parent who is going to be there for this child. So loving statements are where we begin to practice discovering our assets, our attributes. They're there. We just have been so obsessed with the fears and the shame messages, we don't usually see loving statements. And then, because I don't feel that, I'm going to go find a new target. As they say in CODA, we don't have relationships, we take hostages. So I'm going to go find Mary. And if Mary will just tell me how much she loves me and adores me and I matter and I'm important and all this other kind of stuff, then I'm having a good day. And if Mary doesn't, watch out. Because now I just gave her the power of God. Because my well-being and goodness and beauty and amazingness and delightfulness comes from a higher power. And when I give that away to Mary, I set her up to fail. So those two lists, the toxic shame list and then the truth list, the highest truth of a loving higher power, is a place that I started to really take a look at finding where I was compassionate, where I was caring, where I where I was open-hearted, where I was strong, where I would fight for my well-being, where I would stand up for this child spirit within me. Where those were all assets. Not that I could see them to begin with, but they came about through the work and the process. You're welcome. I think we're time to take a break for lunch.
Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you all. We'll see you in a half hour, I believe. We come back at 1?
1 o'clock. Thank you, Ken.
Yes. All right. Enjoy your lunch.